Hi, and welcome to part two of the Celtic Underground season 25 top 10. I'm joined once again by Andrew Smith to talk about the players that finished in our final four for season 25-26. Was difficult to get to 10. How did you find, you said you struggled once you got to 8 last week. How did you find with the top four?
Actually,
who you put, but
No. It was positioning, but the top four wasn't too bad. I think my top four agreed. The positions might not have been the same, but I think I agreed with the top four that came out, in the sense of the names, if not the positions.
I'm going to see if I can find very quickly. This is interesting for the listeners. Bum, bum, bum. Let's see if I could find your top one, two, three. You're absolutely, in fact, your top five is the same as the listeners in terms of the personnel. They were just a slightly different order. You got all the right notes, just in a different order.
Little arm. You need to do that with your glasses.
Exactly. Oh, so first up in our top 10, so if you're listening to this and you didn't listen to it last week, if you were on holiday or something like that, go back. Part one is out to remind people of where we were with the, we had, I should probably do this. In reverse order, we had Iheanacho, Trusty, Yang, Sarachi, Engels, and then Captain Callum McGregor. So we've got the final four of the Celtic Underground top 10. And in fourth position, right, this is where, for me, it starts to get interesting, because the Celtic Underground community in fourth position do not agree with the Celtic players. Because in fourth position, we have, to quote, I think I first heard it from Eddie Pearson, the most invaluable shite player we've ever had, Benjamin Negrin. So, Andrew, there's a player who 58 games, 3,900 minutes, so 1,000 minutes less than Callum McGregor, but I think slightly one game more. An incredible 20 from not a striker, 9 assists, 4 yellow cards. So I've had my say throughout the season on Benjamin Negrin, so enough from me. Take it away, Andrew. Benjamin Negrin, we've got him in fourth place,
which is much lower, as you say, than the players. I would think people will be surprised at that, but maybe we're on our own echo chamber, and we all acknowledge his deficiencies, his myriad deficiencies. And sometimes we do, and Stevie's got a point. St. Anthony's got a point, because he always says, look at what the guy brings rather than what he can't bring. Can't bring any pace, can't bring any kind of intensity sometimes, or he can't...
Or a first touch.
Or he can't or force. Passes. Well, no. Well, you would suggest that he actually... 9 assists isn't he half bad either.
No, it's not. And I think, to be fair, and this is for me where the real challenge, reading online, people's comments on Negrin, and I don't want to sound like Jimmy Sanderson, were you at the game, caller? I think there's a real dividing line between those people online who are fortunate enough to go every week, and those people online who've, you know, through where they stay or work or whatever, don't get to go every week. And that, for me, is where this massive dividing line has come, because it's the people who are not going and are looking, going, well, who else is providing the number of assists as Benjamin Negrin? And who else is, as you say, who else is scoring the goals?
It's not, and he didn't score the fourth, because there wasn't that many 3 or 4 goal wins, but he wasn't that kind of player. He scored decisive goals. You can think about half a dozen times where there was a Negrin goal that got the points. When you think about up in Aberdeen, that the famous wonky line offside goal, like, there was Falkirk, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I think the 1-0 win, that he provided that goal, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there was Firth Park at the end of the season where he gets his going there.
He started the comeback in the Rugby Park, the famous comeback for two down.
Yeah. Although, that, for me, that's the interesting thing about him. 21 goals. Only three after the... Sorry, only two in the league after the end of February.
Yeah, he did dry up. He did dry up. Although, his general performances, again, towards the end of the season, it was as if he'd kind of found... Because it does take you... It can take you a time to settle into a new environment. I seen him quoted again yesterday. He really does fancy that he's getting a move, doesn't he? Maybe he's believing all this stuff that he's reading. I don't know how true it is or otherwise about Spurs and interest in that. But
then,
that level.
For me, that then comes down to the point I was making about the dividing line. If you are looking and judging first and foremost by stats, and it's hard to argue with him because ultimately, goals win games, right? And if it wasn't for Nigrin, we wouldn't have won the double. It's as simple as that. But equally, I remember sitting next to someone whose footballing opinion I value higher than anyone else's at the Rangers game. And there was a point where I think it was Scales placed to Tierney placed to Yang, and two Rangers players had blocked off Yang. Or it was either Yang or Tanecki, can't remember who. Anyway, I think it was Yang. And then, because of the way they're standing, and Yang then plays it back to Tierney, who plays it to Scales, plays it to Thursday, and does that horseshoe of death thing that everyone whines about. Guy says to me, that's Nigrin. Because if Nigrin was a natural number 10 and naturally game aware, he'd have made a quick, short, 5-yard move, and that would have opened up the space for Yang. One of the two people who were doubling up in Yang would have moved towards the ball, vacating space next to Yang. It would have then allowed a really high quality number 10, could have then taken that in and turned it and moved it back inside again and kept going along, but moving it along 20 yards further up the park, or playing it back to Yang. But because he didn't offer that, he just stood marked. But he was getting himself marked rather than the Rangers player marking him. You know what I mean? Like, he got to the Rangers player.
There was a bit of that. But I mean,
and it's the type of thing that I would then be saying to people who don't get to go to games, I would say, but yet none of that shows up in the stats.
No. But see, if he's involved in 30 goal actions, Celtic, how many goals did Celtic score last season? I mean, he might have been involved in roughly about a third of Celtic's goals.
Maybe slightly more than a third.
So they scored 1, 3, 4, 7, 9, 13, 14, 15. They scored 15 in Europe.
But the point I would make
15 in Europe
in relation to that and people's comments about, you know, my negative comments about them, you've got to say, well, okay, Mr. Billy Big Balls, but his teammates, well, I'm watching the game and I'm watching the amount of times that people don't pass to him when in a position.
Yeah.
So many times turn around and say, yeah, but mate, his teammates also voted him player of the year. You know.
Maybe they just couldn't see past his goals. 26. So, no. So he would have been involved in about a quarter of Celtic's goals,
right?
But that's still an incredible return for a player, who's convinced very few that have watched him regularly, as you say. I mean, even Stephen Ryan even seemed he was quite kind of defensive of him in the face of your rather uncharitable denunciations, it has to be said. But by then, towards the end of the season, Stephen Ryan was beginning to say, oh, you know, he is such an exasperating player. And he's a player that, I suppose it kind of happened with Kuhn last year, didn't it? When Kuhn went, and I know people retrospectively went on and on about selling Kuhn, but everybody thought, yeah, good money, take it, move on. If it was to happen again with Nigrin, everybody would say, yeah, move on. He's not a player that you'll be pining for.
No, but equally, the big concern would be, you know, my point prior to this season starting was something like we'd taken something like 70 goals and 25 assists out of the team and replaced it with some, you know, in terms of people, what those players who'd left the team, left in the team in the previous 12 months, what they'd contributed in the season before they'd left. And we replaced it with something like 25 goals and 8 assists, and 18 of those 25 goals were Negrin, you know, in terms of what we replaced it with. So it's all well and good to say, well, you know, there was games when it was like playing with 10 men at times because of his anonymity. But as you say, take his goal contributions out, and suddenly, unless we are replacing him with an equal number of, unless we are replacing him with the same and other new players coming in with goal contributions, next season would be even more bleak. So,
suppose
I've spent the season. I've spent the season bemoaning him, but I have to acknowledge his goals and assists and goal contributions to the team.
It's like girlfriend in a coma. There were times when I could have strangled him, but you know I would hate anything to happen to.
I don't think
Negrin in a coma.
To worry about.
Negrin in a coma. Hey, you played as if he was in a coma sometimes.
So
Negrin in a coma. It actually scans. Negrin in a coma. I know.
Yeah. So, yeah.
By the way, and kudos for people forget it. Again, it was another day. I know I've said it before in the podcast, but I'm standing by it. It was like, it was a series of, like, watching Celtic in the league last season, which is like a series of near-death experiences. And you think about that comeback, which, again, you never wrote off. And I was raging on the text and all that, saying, this, we're lucky to get out four, like a 4-0 here. This could be back to the 5-1s and all this kind of stuff at half-time. And, of course, they brought it back completely different. But it was a great finish from Kieran Tierney, but it was a great ball in from Negrin that day.
Yep.
Remember, it was a great goal.
In the 2-2.
The 2-2. In the 2-2. Yeah. Which, again, it was like Motherwell, as if I'm getting all my old lines out again, but because it was the last season, but the men they couldn't hang, that was what Celtic became. And that was that one of those days. And again, it was Negrin involved in that wrestling the point that.
Yeah, I think it's that dilemma that we're wrestling with. It's a player that somebody else is a bit like when you hear people, fans of other clubs, criticising. You know, it's like fans in the English Premiership wanting a new manager because the football's born under this guy, and you think, well, you get rid of this manager and you'll be a top of the Championship, bottom of the Premiership team, and that's exactly what they then become. When, well, you're not having to watch it every week, so you just see the results. Body looking from afar would say, what the hell were Celtic fans whinging about with Negrin last season? He scored crucial goals. He had 30 goal contributions. He didn't get a life. And, you know, I'm one of them. So, and that's Benjamin Negrin is coming in number 4. So we've
is it again? A conundrum wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a, what was that? Was that famous line again? It's like I was thinking the Groucho Marxman, but it's a sham of a scam of two mockings of a sham. You know, it was a Woody Allen thing. Am I allowed to say Woody Allen still? Like, it's a sham of a scam of two mockings of a sham.
So we've got positions 10 to 4. So I think people can start to work out who might be in our top three, but they might not. But I think people have a good idea who's in our top three from here. It's then where the positionings come in these three players. So, number 3, and I think he gets this because of he's Mr. Consistent in the team. Player number 3 is someone that, again, he's in my Benjamin Negrin group of people that I would like to think, if everything was functioning properly at Celtic, wouldn't be first team picks. But a guy who played 56 games and almost the same number of minutes as Callum McGregor last season. If it wasn't for Nancy, he probably surpassed him. And that player is Liam Scales. So Liam Scales in at number three. 56 games, 2 goals, 3 assists, 4,797 minutes. Brendan liked him. Martin liked him. Nancy didn't. Didn't get in the squad for... He was injured, I think. Or was he suspended?
Remember it.
Semi-final. And on the bench at Livingston. And... missed out a wee bit under Nancy. So, Liam Scales, Andrew, take it away on the Liam Scales Appreciation Society.
Well, I think he's unfairly maligned. Not just by you, but by... Man, he's quick. As we talked about Celtic defenders, when sometimes when it's two against two, in terms of you're just leaving your centre-back's back, it's like he's got a great recovery tackle. Because he's pace, because he can recover quickly. Again, he struggles sometimes. His distribution, we know about his passing, but I think that possibly improved. Again, aerially, he wasn't found wanting that often, I wouldn't say. He was largely consistent. I mean, he has his mad moments, or he has his heart in the mouth moments. He's always a player who's going to give you the jitters at times. He's always a player who's going to have you groaning. I mean, you once said to me in a podcast he shouldn't be Celtic's seventh choice centre back. That's what I think you said.
As high as that.
I think he deserves. I mean, a lot of this top 10 really is, it's a damned by faint praise top 10, isn't it? It really is a damned by faint praise. You couldn't say any player, what a season they had, faultless. We've seen it before, and I know people say, oh, you would never say that across a season. No, we used to be able to say that about players across seasons. You think, he was just... practically start to finish. He what a level he performed at. No, he dipped. But I'll tell you what blotted Liam Scales' copybook for me more than anything that any of his uncertain moments on the pitch was he really wasn't giving Nancy buy-in. And remember he said it was too tiring. He couldn't play that back three. Too tired, you know. He said I just didn't have the energy. You know, it was like that's why Celtic were losing out in games the last 20 minutes, because he said it was just asking too much.
But if you look under Brendan and then Martin, he played 90 minutes. Then he plays 90 minutes against Hearts under Nancy. Then he plays 15 minutes against Dundee United under Nancy. 21 minutes against Aberdeen under Nancy. He's on the bench and doesn't come on against Livingston under Nancy. Plays 90 minutes in the loss against Motherwell under Nancy. Plays 2 minutes in the loss to Rangers under Nancy.
I didn't know. I didn't quite realise it was quite as marked as that.
And then Martin comes back and he plays 90 minutes in every game. This is just the league I'm talking about.
He was exposed, and that maybe shows his limitations. Maybe Nancy showed his limitations, because he was exposed in the games that he did play under Nancy. Nancy was looking for a better quality player. And you would have to say, I think Celtic will sign a centre. I think they'll sign a centre-back. If Cameron Carter-Vickers does come back, then Trusty and Scales could. They should have a fight in their hands. I still want to see Dane Murray, but that's a separate issue. But, you know, I agree with you in the sense of Celtic's recruitment, if their levels were what you'd want Celtic's recruitment and levels to be, Liam Scales wouldn't be your first choice centre back.
No, but that's my point.
Yeah.
He tries his best. You know, it's not, he's doing his best and he's not picking himself to play in the team.
And I think he's improved in the sense that he's not the Scales that was, I mean, the vituperations that were directed his way previous seasons, it's not quite like there's a kind of grudging acceptance of him among.
And again, a bit like we talked about last week about Trusty, I think his best games come when all he's being asked to do is defend.
Definitely. I mean, like if you're looking for distribution, he just can't provide that for you, like Celtic passing from the back.
No, I always think one of the problems is, and if you look at the way that we play, he's the guy that gets trusted with distribution out the back.
Yeah, you know, Trusty's like...
Well, yeah, they don't give Trusty, and even under Brendan when Carter Vickers was fit, it was more Scales than Carter Vickers. My issue is that what then happens is he starts gradually moving up the pitch, and then once he's had it for about 3 seconds, which doesn't sound long, but in a football game actually is a long time to have the ball, it's almost like he's like, I shouldn't have this ball, I just need to hit it somewhere. That's what it feels like.
Yeah,
he does.
But he deserves. I must say that there's certain. I think I got most of the, with the same players apart from Sirachi. Well, no, I had him joint 10th, Sirachi and Araujo. I had them joint 10th because I couldn't really separate them. These kind of bright cameos that their personalities kind of certainly, because it was pretty bleak. You needed people with a bit of personality, and they had a bit of oomph about them. But apart from that, but I have to say that Celtic Underground subscribers 10 is better than my 10. On reflection, I'm going to call it and doff my cap and say, nah, you had a better idea than me.
You've got every one of the Celtic Underground 10 in your 10. As I say, you've got all the right players, just not necessarily in the right order.
I think I had Liam Scales at number two, so I wonder who will be number two.
Well, before we get into number two, let's just have a quick review of the squad and players who get no mention in the top 10. So, obvious ones that, because just they didn't get any game time. We spent €5 million on Balak Wisher. Again, my understanding, we had a challenging issue last summer with some of the people who were in the scouting department who subsequently left, a guy who likes shoes and stuff like that. I believe that you could scout players without looking at players. And so players could be picked purely on stats. And so Balak Wisher gets looked at for quite some time. He's a right-footed player who likes playing on the left, and based on the players that they were looking at, Brendan gets persuaded by them that this is a guy who can play on the right wing. Brendan decides his stats at Royal Antwerp are not bad, and he can play on the right wing, and that's what we need. Let's go and get this guy. We spend €5 million on him, and as soon as he arrives in the door, he tells Brendan he can't play on the right.
Yeah, did he try him at Ibrox? His first game
was at Ibrox, came on as a sub and just didn't look at the races. And then, you know, from a human perspective, you've got to feel a bit sorry for him. He's got this big money move from Royal Antwerp to Celtic, you know, decent money, €5 million, and almost immediately is discarded. You know, so you're then going to be very difficult to lift yourself. Other notable in the wing section, other notable absentee is Sebastian Tenecki.
He just didn't offer enough.
I mean, frustratingly, there's been the odd moment in the odd game, only ever as a substitute, where you think to yourself, there could be something about you.
Yeah, but every time then he was given starts that you thought, no, this is why you're better as a sub.
Yeah, and then you're just thinking, just go to the byline, put the ball in, go to the byline, put the ball in, go to the byline, put the ball in, and do that 10 times in a game, and 7 times are cut out, but 3 times you'll get them in. Because frustratingly, every time he did go to the byline, which was nowhere near enough, and cut the ball in, I mean, he cost us €6 million.
I know,
every time he got to the byline and crossed it in,
was he not getting told? To come off the flat, to come inside, like, because it worked so well for the kind of Kuhn for it, that's what they were doing.
No, he was getting told to go down the left, but occasionally cut inside. He's right footed, likes to play on the left. In the way that modern, I think modern footballers like to do that, people often say, you know, why do managers want inverted wingers? Well, the wingers themselves like to be that way because their body's more open. If you're right-footed playing on the left, your body's more open and you're not doing it in the line. Other players, if we go through some more who don't get a mention.
Kasper Schmeichel
and Sinisalo Salo, neither getting a mention. Do you know who the worst goalkeeper in terms of all the various metrics of saves of it, or however the expected saves, i.e. their save ratio against XG and their distribution? When you combine their save ratio against XG and the distribution of the ball, short and long, do you know who the worst goalkeeper in the Premiership was last season?
Don't tell us it was Sinisalo.
I've been a remiss here. Kasper Schmeichel was the fourth worst.
Yeah, I know that he's Schmeichel. I mean, Schmeichel had some good games.
He did. For me, he had high-profile howlers that...
Which always, that's the lot of the goalkeeper, isn't it? That's the... And he was, that's the whole idea, but that, you know, he didn't care about Celtic because he was trying to keep him, like, he was trying to get in the World Cup squad. And no, that's not the way players think. He wasn't thinking like that, because if he wasn't fit, then he wasn't going to get in. He thought he was fit enough to do both. He thought he was fit enough to play for Celtic and fit enough to play for Denmark. As it turned out, I mean, when you see him, it was understandable as well, but he was up the halfway line. But the Kenny McLean thing, didn't do him even any favours. Even internationally, it didn't do him any favours getting lobbed to the halfway line, like that Scotland game.
Are they needing to score a goal? His team's up the park.
I know, but it just wasn't a good look. There was just things that... God, I mean, it was a sad end to his career.
Yeah, I would have liked to finish differently. And again, in this modern world where everybody's angry about everything else, he can't just have been, it didn't work out. Some of the online vitriol from people was...
It was horrible. It was horrible. A guy who's given good service to Celtic.
Yeah. So other players that were not mentioned, Shin Yamada, that was the night.
But they never played enough. You wouldn't even think of them. They never played enough.
Early on in the season, he played against Livingston, and I came home and thought, wow, that guy doesn't even know where... he's like my dog chasing a football down the park. And I came home and people are messaging saying, Yamada looked good. And I thought it was a practical joke people are playing on me. And then there was Callum Osmond injured the majority of the season. But my goodness me, his teeny tiny input into the season was dramatic to say the least. But Brendan had ignored him and put him down into the B team. He'd come from Fulham, sold the story of... we bring on projects and Brendan immediately sticks him in the B team, feels a bit disorientated. Martin comes in, plays him and wow.
Yeah, I mean, and even that last day, I mean, we'll all remember his goal, of course. But he got an assist as well. He got an assist. Assist, Andy. Yeah.
Then we, Jamal Simpson-Pusey
came
and went away again.
He was very caustic. Remember the one start I gave him? The one start I gave him, and he was very caustic after it, wasn't he?
Which is something about Martin O'Neill, which there's an element to when you hear former players. It's not, I think Steen was possibly worse than this, but you hear former players talk about Steen, it seems to be either he really liked you and you're one of his guys, or he thought you were shit and he let you know about it.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And Martin seems like that.
Martin is like that. He definitely is. And it's definitely a kind of Clough thing as well. You know, they were always saying about they just wanted the thumbs up because it was always John Robertson got the kind of, nobody else could get the, and if you got the, from the bench, you thought, what a game I must be having.
Yep. So there's those players. Then we have the January window where, you know, we're behind in the league. So we get £70 million in the bank. So let's chuck everything at it. Or maybe not. Let's not chuck anything at all. To be fair,
they were willing to spend money on a couple of players.
Getting players in is a challenging issue because a January window starts in September. You're finalising negotiations in November and you sign the player in January. We chucked everything out in November, started again, and then chuck everything out in January and start again. But the players that we brought in, Ben Arthur, he was all right in a couple of games he played.
He was Adamu, okay.
Adamu, we wouldn't have won the double if it wasn't for
Adamu.
Wouldn't
have won the double, yeah. I'm putting a huge goal against Dundee.
Araujo. Now, Araujo, for me, was the best of the bunch in the January transfer window.
He was. And it was only injury that we would have seen a fair bit more of him, I'm pretty sure, but for injury.
Yeah, and obviously, who will forget the winner at Rugby Park?
Of course. Oh, yeah, and he's...
going into the stand.
Sitting down with the punters.
Definitely a connection between him and the supporters. I think he appreciated the passion compared to what he just experienced down at Bournemouth. Mvuka, wow. He was the one that we nearly signed, and then the medical issue arose the night before we signed him, when suddenly Celtic think, maybe we shouldn't be signing him.
Felt sorry for him. I felt sorry for these guys. It was funny. It was funny when you saw them with the suits on in the cup final day, wasn't it? Because I sent him because I was over in New York at the time, so I was watching it, and I had to actually say to him, who is that? There was these Celtic players you thought, you didn't even recognise them. You'd seen so little of them.
So Oxlade-Chamberlain?
Another huge goal that had a bearing on.
And he's done enough for Martin to keep him around. I do wonder whether the possibility of the departure of Callum McGregor was a deciding factor in Martin thinking that he wanted a bit more experience in bringing in Oxlade-Chamberlain for the coming season.
Yeah, that would make sense. I did think about that myself. And then we've got
Shivanchira, who Martin obviously was trying to get something, in general, played him, appreciated him. And then there's the winning penalty at Ibrox that he puts in the back of the net.
But he just seemed to... He was a guy who started well and just fell off a cliff again. As opposed to sometimes takes you a wee bit of time to settle. Once he's settled, disintegrated.
And the challenge, you can see the mentality between what we did with Mvuka and Adamu and Shivanchira. We looked at players who had a track record of scoring in domestic football of a standard of Scottish football that had gone to a big five league and it hadn't worked out for them. And the concept behind that, as a rationale behind it, there's a guy who's proved he can do it at our level, the level we're needing for the remainder of the domestic season. He's got that move to the bigger club and it's not worked out for him. Maybe bringing him back down the level to Scottish football level will be just what he needs. But of course, the challenge you've got is that's a guy who's not playing first team football, hasn't played first team football. And the reason he's not playing first team football is because he's out of form.
And if you're out of form, you're just there's no confidence. And none of these guys looked as if they'd any reservoir of confidence to dip into, did they?
No, but you might have hoped. Banjira came on and set up that goal at Tynecastle in the 2-2 and looked about. Adamu scoring that last minute winner in the cup, you might have hoped those would be the things that would trigger somebody's confidence and bring it back. Would have been the hope. Obviously, we also had Colby Donovan, Dave Murray that you mentioned.
Colby Donovan, that was his first, that was his breakthrough season, I think.
Yeah.
I think he acquitted himself well. He was really young. He was really young. He had some difficult moments, but he also had some good moments that people seem to forget once the difficult moments came along.
And he's 18.
He's 18, yeah.
Although I remember speaking to a scout and I was talking about, God, what's the lad that we sold to West Ham? Was it Cumming?
Daniel Cumming.
Daniel Cumming. And this is maybe about 18 months ago. And I said, well, if we not get anything coming through, I'm not watching the games, but we've got Daniel Cumming scoring goals in the youth Champions League youth setup, and he's only 19. And this person said to me, no, he's 19. And I said, that's what I said. He's only 19. No, he's 19. And their point was, you go in the main Champions League, and the majority of teams in the Champions League will have someone 17 or 18 who's getting regular first team game time in the Champions League, actually in the Champions League.
I was watching Mexico at this World Cup, and they had a 17-year-old in the centre of midfield.
So that is the fringe players who didn't get a mention. We've got two positions left. I think people can work out. We've gone through Iheanacho, Trusty, Yang, Sarachi, Engels, McGregor, Negrin, Scales. We've just gone through the list of players who aren't in the top 10. So you know that there's two players left. And it's just who is where. Obviously, we mentioned St. Anthony earlier. St. Anthony, one of these players, he has said all season that he's not there and wants Sarachi playing more football. The other one of these two players, I think universally people would say, really turned up for the last eight games of the season. And my point in agreement to that was, yes, because if he turned up at the start of the season, we'd have been playing Champions League football and perhaps Brendan Rodgers would still be here. So it is an odd thing about who it is. So the question
up
is...
The season sums up
it
the
does,
season.
It does sum up the season, but equally, a bit like we were talking about Negrin in fourth place, equally this guy who's in the top two, we wouldn't have won the league without him. So without further ado, who is number two in the Celtic Underground top 10? It is former Celtic starlet and Arsenal player Kieran Tierney, who, when we signed him, there was much talk about we should be keeping hold of Greg Taylor because we know that Kieran Tierney is only going to play 20-odd games this season.
Well, I think I said 12 or 14, I think I was even.
Kieran Tierney played 53 games this season, scored 6 goals, and this is the big one for me, 12 assists from Kieran Tierney. Only 3 bookings, 3,900 minutes, so more or less 4,000 minutes. If you look, I remember being told at the beginning of the season that when he'd come in, the medical staff had gone through all these medical records, all the assessments of him, and had built up and had created the sort of, this is the game time we're going to be needing to do on Kieran Tierney till he can get to full 90 minutes game time round about October. And if you look at the league, his first 90 minutes was the 19th of October. In fact, his first two 90 minutes were Brendan Rodgers' last two league games.
And then, we lost the both of them, eh?
And we lost both of them. So,
no blame them for that. Kieran Tierney, astonishing. I mean, even he acknowledged afterwards he didn't expect to play. I mean, he was coming off the back of, like, essentially, four out of his last 6 seasons. Really injury disrupted, because you remember about his last season at Celtic, he played very rarely. Like, I think it was after the kind of Christmas time. He only played 3 or 4, made 3 or 4 starts, because he was just, it was a real issue for him. Like, so for him to come back and do that, and he's a class act. He's a class act. We know he's not the Kieran Tierney of old. We know he's not the kind of rampager down the flank. Like obviously his pace has been affected, but he's still a class performer. And he's more of a threat now than he was probably his first time around. You're not surprised to see him getting shots away. He scored a couple of... I mean, eventually getting it. That was his first goal against a Rangers, wasn't it? Like that he got there at Ibrox, which really was crucial. The draw that coming back for 2-0 down. And yeah, I've got nothing but admiration for the guy. And I think it's for Celtic to have this guy, even a reduced Kieran Tierney, as their fullback, who can play like 50-plus games. You still need to manage them. There's some players that are like that. You just need to manage them. But you saw it at the World Cup, didn't you? Like, when he came on against Brazil. And what Scotland had been doing nothing down that flank, and he set up about 3 chances.
I remember speaking to someone about Phil O'Donnell, how he would never... I don't think he ever had something like more than 3 consecutive games in a Celtic jersey. And then when he went down to Sheffield Wednesday, same thing happened. But when he came back to Motherwell, he started playing every week. And I remember the person saying that sometimes when you're a player who's had a number of injuries, you then start to, every time you feel anything, you're so concerned, particularly muscle injuries, you're so concerned that, is this about to go?
Yeah.
That you start to look to be substituted before you need to be substituted, because you're so concerned that if I keep playing through this, this little wee twinge that I've just felt will turn into something that will have me out for 6 weeks, and I'm fed up being out for 6 weeks. And you start to look for injuries. I think also similar, if you remember, Sean Maloney could be a bit
like that. I remember. I think we said it was psychological.
I think that can be one of the problems. If you're a player who's had injuries, it can then start to be psychological. So equally, you could see it then having a positive psychological effect for Tierney.
I think you could see that. You could see that. And there was a lot of, like, I know St. Anthony wasn't alone. People think, Saracchi should play more. He gives Celtic more creatively, which the stats don't back up really, do they? But when you looked at the both players and you think, no, Tierney is the much better defender.
Yes, I mean, Saracchi, I like.
He's
the much more solid
defender.
Saracchi's suited to some of the domestic football where teams are sitting in and we need extra attacking players to it. But you're right, against the higher quality opposition, Tierney's a better defender, and it's the stats show.
Yeah, and he had
more assists than our wingers.
Yeah, he had some good games in Europe as well, Tierney. So you can show that he could still step it up. And what is he, 28 now?
Yeah. So I mean, for me, I think he's the most likely. He's 29. He's 29. He's just turned 29.
Is he turned 29 now?
Turned 29 a month ago.
Right.
So for me, if Callum were to leave this summer, and if he doesn't leave this summer, Callum's going to leave sometime in the next 2 years. For me, Kieran Tierney's the obvious next captain at Celtic.
Yeah, he was born for that role, really, wasn't he?
Yeah. And maybe he'll feel a bit more comfortable with the fan on the pitch, being the fan on the pitch, Kieran Tierney, when he maybe felt a bit uncomfortable being that guy this season as well. Also, it's been a bit of turmoil. He's persuaded to come back by Brendan Rodgers. You know, that's the guy who's persuaded him. He's his hero manager from first time around. Then Brendan leaves. Then Martin comes in. Then Martin leaves. And then Nancy comes in and has an unusual setup for the defenders to play. And then Nancy leaves again. You know, that's the other thing in everything that we are talking about here about
the turmoil. I know we're not supposed to feel sorry for them, but it wasn't easy to be a Celtic player last year, and their performances showed that. Although it was going off the rails, or Rodgers wouldn't have left. It was going off the rails. He only won two of his final six league games. I'm right in saying Brendan Rodgers.
So if we look at the. But I think that was as much to do with he was utterly pissed off by the summer.
Yeah, but it just allowed the hissy fit to just never end it.
I do think if he'd have stayed, and if he'd have changed, things would have changed, but right, to start off with a 1-0 against St Mirren, 2-0 Aberdeen, 3-0 Livingston, 0-0 Rangers, one of the few teams that could have beat us from Rangers, 2-1 Kilmarnock, 0-0 Hibs, 3-2 Motherwell. And that's okay. Throw a couple of games, a bit of frustration. Then there's a defeat against Barton with a beat. And then that's it. So it's disrupting for the players, and that's why it's going to have a thing for the players.
Let's go through the Celtic Underground top 10, the places 10 to 2 before we get.
There's no getting Alan Fluff Freeman. Nice to see you again, mate.
So, number 10, we've got Gleggie and Acho. Number 9, Austin Trusty. Number 8, Yang. Number 7, Sirachi. Number 6 is Arne Engels. Number 5, Callum McGregor. Number 4, Benjamin Negrin. Number 3, Liam Scales. Kieran Tierney. And number 1 is...
Dyson Maeda.
Dyson Maeda. Take Celtic Underground's top 10 player of the year for season 25-26. Dyson Maeda. Had 54 games last season, playing 4,241 minutes, 17 goals, 10 assists, 9 yellow cards. Really interesting thing about Dyson Maeda, which really sums up the season. 7 goals for the team pre-split, 7 goals for the team post-split.
Yeah, it
was, that illustrates, you know, he's come in at the end, last minute run. Dyson Maeda is the man who secured the season, the incredible overhead kick against...
Should they get one of those kind of dazzling kind of like bowler hearts and sing to you, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. It's not how you go, it's how you land.
Incredible overhead kick against Rangers.
Goal for the ages.
Yes. I mean, if you go through it, 2 goals in the final, in the post-split, 2 goals against Falkirk, goal against Hibs, 2 goals against Rangers, goal against Motherwell, and then the goal against Hearts, which made it 2-1, which was the real sort of turning point in that game. Also scores in the Cup semi-final against St Mirren, and scores in against Dunfermline in the Cup final.
Only became only the second Celtic player, apparently, since 1990 to score in 7 consecutive games.
And the other aspect of it was, once Martin came back, his assists in the Europa League, 2 against Feyenoord, 1 against Bologna, were very similar in terms of just pressuring the goalkeeper who's trying to play out from the back. And the high pressure, high press, setting up those goals. So,
but I mean... Bizarrely, but between January and March, was it, he went 17 games without a goal, was it?
He scored in the 2-1 defeat under Nancy at Tannadice. And if you remember, he missed a glorious chance there. He then scored home against Dundee United in the return of Martin when we won 4-0. And then didn't score again until... after the split.
Yeah.
No goal and no assist. He, from the 10th of January, where he scored against Dundee United, no goals or no assists thereafter until Falkirk game, where he has 2 goals and 1 assist. Then he scores against Hibs, scores 2 against Rangers, as I say, one with the overhead bicycle kick, scores against Motherwell, and then, of course, the second goal against Hearts.
Yeah, you see it, like you see this in another website, and you see that cluster of goals, and then it's just nothing. Hold on, I'll tell you many appearances. After he scored, as you say, in that, the 4-0 and the second coming of Martin this season, last season, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Yes, 17 games without a goal. Easily his longest in the club and across his 212 appearances for Celtic. 212 appearances, 72 goals. I mean, we've probably seen the last of them, surely, in a Celtic jersey. But what a way to sign off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he'd have been sold just after missing that chance against Almaty, the Champions League playoff, and then he missed in the shootout, didn't he? He missed one of the penalties in the shootout.
Yeah. The whole penalty shootout was awful, but yeah.
Well, yeah.
The other interesting thing, just I'm noticing it about Dyson Maeda, that I've now starting to notice, half our team seem to have been booked in 90 plus 6 or 90 plus 7 against Hearts.
It's one of the things going through the players when they're looking at bookings, the amount of 90 plus 6, 7 that's coming in the Hearts game. So I don't know whether a whole raft of our players were booked at the final whistle, because I don't remember all these players getting booked in game. So yeah.
I remember Dyson getting booked because he had a bit of a kind of set too. Like it was quite unlike him. Who was it that he was really having a bit of a kind of, who was it? He really, like, wasn't he Shatton? Was it? But there was some, he had some kind of personal altercation in the Hearts game that he was really nipped about something. Something had happened to him or somebody was doing something to him, but I can't see past him. I mean, he is okay. He turned up for 2 months, but what a 2 months. If you're going to turn up, that's how you turn up, is it not?
That's right, yeah. I mean, I remember.
You win your team an unlikely title, and then you get them over the line in the cup final.
I remember watching a thing on Sky or something. Anyway, talking about when the English Premiership really then started to bring in the concept of squad rotation and stuff like that. And I can't remember. I think it was Mourinho was talking about teams win trophies March to May. So everything about the way English Premiership is that their players are fit, that all their key players, unless somebody gets an injury in game, all their key players should be match fit at their fittest from March to May, because that's when the trophies are handed out.
It kind of largely worked out that way with Celtic, didn't it?
And that's when Maeda turned up. Just keep yourself, you know, that was in the time when things like Ferguson would rotate players and lose games. You know, West Ham would be down the bottom of the league and Man United would lose at home to West Ham or something like that, you know, in November and December. But it was okay because Arsenal under Wenger would also rotate players and lose games at that time of year as well. Because it was all about, you're going to drop points at that time of year anyway. That's when the pitch is at their worst. Look after your players. Make sure everybody's available and fit because the trophies are handed out in March.
Fair enough.
And he's there. So he is.
Deservedly so. Did you? You know my, I put him as number one. Did you have him as number one?
I had him as number one.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to think, you know, in terms of my...
Influence. It's influence and
Influence. Influence and impact. I think I had Engels a wee bit higher.
Yeah, I could make a case for that. But
I had Maeda at one. I had, similar to this, in terms of Maeda at one, Tierney at two. I think I also had Negrin at four. Because despite, you know, my criticism all year of him as a player, I have to accept in terms of the contribution to the team this season, he was certainly in our top five. Many people would argue he's in our top two, should be. But obviously the...
I think I maybe had him as number two.
The subscribers to Celtic Underground didn't.
But I think they've shown themselves.
Number two, you had Tierney at number four, McGregor five, Negrin two, Maeda one, Scales three. So you just did, in terms of what the main listeners did, you had Tierney and Negrin swapped round.
Yeah, I think actually on reflection, listeners, it was a better judgment than my judgment calls. They'll not be surprised at that after if anybody's.
But it is really interesting because I actually just thought Negrin's going to win this. Negrin will romp it. Because
yeah, I suppose, and he's not even top three.
I thought Negrin would romp it because he has scored the goals. And in a season when we were crap, when the football in general was crap, so your point earlier about it's not like there was somebody who was a star performer who brought it up. In the football where everybody wasn't, nobody was particularly at the races that you were going every week saying he's the man. In a season like that, a guy who puts the ball, a guy who's not a main striker, who puts the ball in the net 21 times and has 9 assists, you would expect in a season, if your criticism of him is that he's not contributing every week, well, neither's anybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
But the one thing he was doing was putting the ball in the back of the net. I actually thought he would romp it. But my in the back of the head comment, thought process was, yes, but the fans love Maeda as a person.
They do.
They warm to him more. And he did it at the end of the season when it really, really mattered. and he got that Rangers goal, the Rangers goal, particularly the overhead kick, and he got the second goal against Hearts, which was the thing that...
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the way I felt as well. And he took it on in the World Cup, another great finish for Japan in the World Cup. And
I think in some of the comments, he's more or less said he was a bit disinterested for the last chunks of our season.
He did admit it.
Which is another reason why you think he's going to be good.
But yeah, they can't afford to have that again. And his value is... I mean, I still don't... That's not what I heard about. Was it Wolfsburg or something like that last year? I'd heard that it was. I've seen it reported the other day. It was like 20 million. I hadn't ever got close to 20 million. Because Celtic would have sold them then for 20 million.
We'd have sold them for 20
million. It was 13 million. But they're actually, 1 year on, I think they're going to get, they'll get 15 million for Brentford or whatever.
He's 28. So this is the, again, this is the point where if this is the peak he could get. He scored at the World Cup. You could see a
played well at the World Cup.
You could see a 15 million pound offer coming in for him.
I can see a 15 million. Yeah, 15.
Not that I'm wanting to sell all our players, and obviously you've conceded.
No, but you want to sell him because he wants to go. And what was it? Martin O'Neill said he's paid his dues.
Yeah,
he paid his dues.
And Martin sees
it was Eric B and Rakimi. It was Eric B and Rakimi paid in full. We don't get that somewhere then.
No. You need to get me these in advance, and then I can. and Martin sees Callum Osmond as someone who could replace Maeda's high press running in the setup.
What, Martin O'Neill believes that?
He does, yeah.
Right.
There's somebody else coming in.
Duran, his
big thing apparently is his pace.
His intensity, his runs.
I think he was up there in. Was he score five Champions League goals last season?
Five Champions League goals
in 10 games.
Yeah.
And I think he was right. He was right up there in the number of runs above about 30 odd kilometres an hour, which is, you know, in terms of sprints, the numbers.
Was he sixth or something? Or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Champions League or something.
And they'll get him
over the line. Well, by the time you watch this, it might
almost. I would expect so.
Cut it out if it doesn't.
No.
If anything goes wrong, right?
I don't need to cut it out. You'll be a Celtic player. So that is the Celtic Underground top 10 for season.
Well, I have to say, I'm pretty impressed. I'm pretty impressed at our subscribers.
It's a sophisticated bunch.
It was a pretty, of course we were all led by Maeda, as you've explained, so we should have been, but it was quite a smart list in a kind of an awkward, difficult campaign.
Yep. So, be interesting to see. So, Iheanacho, Saracchi, Engels, Negrin, Maeda, possibly even McGregor, you could see at least half of that not even being an option for next season.
Wow. It feels like it's a time, it's the changing of the guard is required.
Yeah.
With a one-season manager.
Yeah. It does also seem every season we're having to have youngsters playing with the first team squad to come through. But I just get the impression that perhaps there might be a bigger push this summer to have more of our the likes of McArdle. I think it's Haney is the left back that they like.
Ross were talking the other week or whatever. He does. I think he sees something in Dane Murray as well. He's a very O'Neill-like player.
He is. He's just got to stop making the howler every second game. The Moody Spurn Maldini needs to cut that out. Anyway, that is the end of Celtic Underground season 25-26, which was our 20th season as podcasting, the world's longest running football fans podcast. So from this point on, effectively, with the team now about to get into pre-season, from this point on, it is effectively season...
Wow.
Our 21st season as a football fans podcast, and it'll be interesting to see how the window pans out, how the summer pans out. Need to get some players in.
I need to get some new heroes to vote in our top 10 next year.
Yeah, and hopefully the football will be a bit more exciting than it was for the last chunks of last season. Fingers crossed. And with that, Andrew, in your Hawaiian shirt, I will say thanks
very
much.
Well, it is the summer, right?
It is, exactly. Tell Scotland, except for viewers in Scotland.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. I was up north and it's like I said, guys, I'm not even saying you're backward. You're not so much the land that time forgot. You're the land that summer forgot.
Well, currently, and that's Glasgow as well. Anyway, as I say, right. Except for viewers in Scotland, the test match is about to start, except for viewers in Scotland, where you've got live coverage of the...
indoor bowl.
The General Assembly of the Church of Scotland. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, Andrew, saying goodnight.
Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.